At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Ronaldinho takes, and David Seaman's cool off his line, and Brazil take the lead. Oh, how about that? Shaqiri, here is Shaqiri. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes!
Is Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Believe it or not, you can pinch yourself and say to yourself, yes, next June, 7 World Cup games will be played in Houston, Texas, 5 in the group stages, and 2 knockout round matches. Call in number tonight, 713-780-3776. And as you heard, big thank you to Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, Energy, and Quanta. Tonight on the show, Eric Winalda, the former men's national team player, scored that memorable free kick in 1994. He joins me tonight to talk his World Cup experiences. Jorge Ramos will join the show tonight. You remember him from Jorge Ramos and Subanda. He's taken a little sabbatical. He's bringing that back in podcast form. He's not on ESPN Deportes anymore. Jorge's called a lot of games. I've been in a vehicle or two with him after some big international games, riding back to a hotel. So Jorge Ramos is going to be on tonight as well. He also weighs in on Marcelo Bielsa, but he has a really, really interesting take, I think, on how maybe the World Cup can marry meritocracy and competition with expansion, which is pretty, pretty interesting. So I'm putting it out here like I did on my email or social media, excuse me. And that is tonight in this segment, 713-780-3776. I want you guys to call in tonight and give us your most memorable World Cup experience. It could be the first time you ever saw it on TV. It could be a game you went to in a foreign country. It could have been 94 in the U.S. Could have been the U.S. advancing in 1994. Whatever it is, what is your favorite World Cup moment? It could be a singular play from somebody. You know, if you're Argentine, you might like The Hand of God by Diego Maradona. I don't know. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We'll start it off tonight. Whatever your favorite World Cup moment is, and then I'm going to get you up to speed on a couple of other things. But we've got one caller already. Let's go to Federico. Federico, what do you got?
Glenn, how are you doing? Look, for me, one that really touched my heart was the final 2014 Argentina, Germany, and Brazil. I'm Argentine. If you know, I was in Germany at the time, and it was such a heartbreak, you know, that I could just, it meant so much for me at the time that I realized, you know, how important soccer was in my life. You know, I couldn't go to work the next day. Imagine alone in Germany and Argentine after that. Impossible.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, you've had some pretty darn good times too, right? Including the last World Cup in Qatar, right?
Well, the last one, yes, but after that, I mean, before that, before the Copa America, a couple of years before that, we had been in a pretty dry couple of decades,
true.
If you think about it.
Good point, and then you had mentioned you were alone in Germany, so, yeah, I can hear it. That's an excellent one, Federico. Thank you so much for calling in tonight. We appreciate it, for kicking it off.
Of course, Glenn.
All right.
Stay hearing. Bye-bye.
It's Federico kicking it off there. Argentina losing to Germany. And he was alone in Germany as an Argentine. But, boy, the passion of Argentina. It's been on display in the FIFA Club World Cup as well. 713-780-3776. What's your biggest World Cup moment? Let us know. 713-780-3776. 3776. So we are doing these viewing parties of past World Cups every month around town. We just did one up at Senate Avenue Brewing, and we did the 1962 World Cup in Chile, which ended up Brazil beating Czechoslovakia in the final, and then Chile and Yugoslavia in third. But we'll do a little bit of a synopsis on that. But we're doing these viewings around town. All right, I think we got another caller right here. All right, let's go to Bill. Bill, what do you got on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Glenn? So I got a couple. So I was able to go in 94 to six games, five in Dallas, and got to the East Coast where I'm from, and went to a game in Washington. But I guess my biggest moment would I was able also to go to 98 in France. And I had 6 days in Paris, 6 days in Nice, where we went to games in Marseille. And I guess for a moment, first of all, just the atmosphere around the city, the stadium is incredible, especially like Hotel de Ville in France, around the French games. But really, my moment goes back to being able to see David Beckham get a red card.
Oh, wow. You were at that game?
I was at that game, and it was just an incredible atmosphere. And, you know, we were actually, you know, at times like, what are we going to do if something breaks out here? We're going to we're going to go up in the stadium, not down where everybody else is going to go. But
so that was against atmosphere. Argentina, right? And Diego Simeone kind of sold that, right? When you look back at that video of that play when Beckham got sent off, did Simeone embellish it?
Yeah, absolutely, he did, and you know, David should have had the experience to get out and get away and get above that, and he made his choice and he got what he deserved.
Excellent stuff, Bill. Thank you very much for that phone call. Ooh, nobody can forget that, Diego Simeone. And by the way, Diego Simeone is here with the FIFA Club World Cup in Atletico Madrid. They got smacked by PSG 4-0. 80,000 people in the Rose Bowl. So there are some great attendances at this FIFA Club World Cup, which the whole idea here is to get it launched, and then it'll be every 4 years. Oh, we got the Gold Cup going on. So back to the 1962 World Cup in Chile. Brazil wins the final 3-1. This was a viewing party we did. We're doing one next month, and it'll be the 1966 World Cup. This is our way of trying to bring attention and awareness to the upcoming World Cup in Houston. And Bill mentioned, you know, the atmosphere around. Well, you know, 500,000 to a million people are coming here. And I'm telling you, there are going to be a lot of people that are going to make this their home base to fly to other games around the country because of where we are situated here. So the access to get to other cities is great. We're going to have a lot of people on the streets of Houston. And they're going to spend money. They're going to need lodging. They're going to need food. It's going to be exceptional. So this was a second consecutive win for Brazil in Chile. Pelé was now 21 years of age. He got hurt in, the first game. So he was not really as big a part of this as maybe history might tell you. The star player was Garrincha. I believe they called him the Little Bird, but he was an exceptional dribbler. He could take people on. But to watch this was really cool. It was in black and white. You could see the time period in the clothes the fans were wearing. Somebody would score a goal, and there'd be six or seven photographers running with the guy back to the halfway line. Nobody would try to keep him off the field. They'd get their shots, and they'd scurry back off the field. The World Cup before this, I think, was close to almost 5 goals per game. This one got edgy. It got a little bit more violent as far as the aggression of the game in this 1962 version, and they were scoring less than 3 goals a match in this. So consider this now with all the qualification around the world, which, again, this is why the World Cup is so extremely special. It's a 4-year process pretty much to qualify. It takes 4 years. Back then, there's only 52 teams trying to qualify, and 16 teams made it. So it was really a lot different, and now it's a lot about expansion. Now, what we know for 2026, here's who's qualified: Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Ecuador, Iran, Japan, And now here's where we get into maybe making this a 48-team tournament. You're getting countries now like Jordan and Uzbekistan. Now, if Italy doesn't make a World Cup, there are going to be teams from Europe and even South America that aren't going to make the World Cup that are better than Jordan and Uzbekistan, but this is the way it is now, 48 teams. New Zealand has made it. South Korea has made it. And then, of course, the three host nations, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, all in it. So, you know, the question here is expanding the tournament. Does it lower the competitive standard? I mean, I think that's a pretty resounding yes. Does it make it an easier path for top teams? I think maybe so. You know, growing the game means more content, more commercial value, more regional representation, raising the level of the game globally, which is a good thing. But I think you don't want to mess with the meritocracy of the tournament. And I don't want to spoil it because Jorge Ramos will do an interview tonight, but I think he's come up with a really good idea on how to marry the commercial value of the World Cup and everybody who wants to make the money off it, obviously, along with not demystifying it too much. Remember, the first expansion was in 1998 when it went from 24 to 32 teams. It did not lower the quality. There was enough talent and good enough 32 teams in the world, but 48 teams is a pretty big leap. It's another 16 teams. All right, speaking of that, I do want to remind you, this 2026 World Cup, it's expected to be the most lucrative World Cup in history and ever staged. Revenues are projected to top $10 billion. FIFA expects to bring in $13 billion over the four-year cycle, which includes qualifying and everything else. So almost 75% more than the $7.5 billion from Qatar in the 2022 cycle. So that's pretty incredible. I mean, a lot of that has to do with 48 teams being in it as opposed to 32, growing the amount of games from 64 to 104. They are calling it a, quote, global moment of convergence with sport technology, music, culture, media, politics, and identity all colliding at an unprecedented scale. That's what they're saying. So it's all happening. Eric Wynalda is going to join us in the second segment. Eric was a participant in three World Cups. I think most noted, you know, as far as a singular play, people remember him scoring that free kick against Switzerland in the second half in the Pontiac Silverdome, which doesn't exist anymore. I even played in the Pontiac Silverdome. I played in the Pontiac Silverdome before he scored that goal there. There's a few more people there when he was playing, as opposed to the nights that we played there back in the professional leagues. But Eric's going to join us, and then Jorge Ramos will join us in the final segment. So a lot of really interesting, good things going on. And we will continue our talk here. So a reminder about the Gold Cup, because the U.S. is going to play on Thursday in Austin against Saudi Arabia. Gold Cup Group A is Mexico, Costa Rica, Suriname, the Dominican Republic. Games are rolling fast. And you're going to get to that July 6th final here in Houston really quick. Canada, Honduras, El Salvador, Curaçao. Curaçao is coached by Dick Advocaat, the famous coach who coached the Netherlands. He's doing an event tomorrow at the Dynamo headquarters, 4:30 to 5:30. It's put on by my good friend Jan Luke and Team Houston. I would go to that. This is a manager, if you look him up right now, he has coached some massive teams, has a remarkable coaching career. The amount of teams he's coached is pretty interesting. And the amount of time he spent at certain jobs, you know, it was always like a year or two, and that's it. He was moving on. But he has coached some huge teams. So that's Dick Advocaat. He's now the head coach of Curaçao, which is an island in the Caribbean that has Dutch influence. So it's part of the reason why they snagged him. And I also have a local connection to that, because the general manager of the old Houston Dynamos, my team, was a man named Jim Walker. But prior to that, he was a general manager in Chicago with the Chicago Sting. And Dick Advocaat was, I believe, on the team when he was the GM in 1980. And Jim Walker, who's really been a big part of our youth soccer community, I mean, he would have been a great guy to have brought down and had propped up on the stage for the one-year out show, honoring some of the youth community people. It's important. Got to put everybody under the wings of this. This is a Houston-wide, Texas-wide, U.S.-wide event that's coming, and we all aim to have a great time at it. Group C was Panama, Jamaica, Guatemala, Guadeloupe, USA, Haiti, Trinidad and Tobago, and Saudi Arabia in Group D. All right, this is Jimmy Cliff, The Harder They Fall. Coming up next, Eric Winalda, former U.S. men's national team player. This should be an interesting interview. I think people are going to like that. And you are listening to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, here on ESPN 97.5, presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta, and Houston Methodist. I'm Glenn Davis. We take a break. We come back.
John and Lance, weekday mornings from 7 to 10.
Cam Smith, woo, he is adept and he's a major leaguer.
When you traded to the Cubs, traded Kyle Tucker there. And the reason you did it is to go try to hopefully grab a guy like Cam Smith.
It looks like they won that. They won that trade. No question.
Listening to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. Here on ESPN 97.5, presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta, and Houston Methodist. This is Rival Sons. The name of the song is Good Luck. But a guy who's had a lot of good luck, he's going to join me now. He's former U.S. men's national team striker, Eric Winalda, who joins us now. 1994 World Cup, you'll remember Eric produced that brilliant free kick against Switzerland in Detroit at the Pontiac Silver Dome. Eric, thanks for coming on tonight.
Yeah, to the day, by the way.
Yes.
And I just realized that. Somebody started sending me some notes and saying, hey, I remember, and I'm like, oh, it is. It's June 18th, so here we go.
Unbelievable, and it was an unbelievable free kick, and it was a time where I guess the U.S. soccer culture was in a moment of growth. Is that something you would agree with, that we were, as a country then, still developing a pretty deep soccer culture?
It was an interesting time. It's been quite the debate, you know, with everything going on with our team now. Everybody making comparisons to teams of former decades, and you know, we're talking 30 years ago. But I felt that we were a group that just kind of had a chip on our shoulder. You know, we were coming from different places. We had guys like Dooley and Ernie Stewart and Tab and John and myself, and Lexi was being introduced to the world. But you still had guys that were, you know, that seen their fair share of experiences through, you know, Clavijo and Caligiuri, and you know, it was a group that we felt that under those circumstances, playing in front of our own country with an unbelievable opportunity to prove that we could do it and play at a really high level and get some cool results, it was so important to us to perform. I mean, it was just a matter of could we handle the pressure, and ultimately, I would argue that we did.
All right, so let's go to that 1-1 draw with Switzerland. It's the opening game. Certainly that goal, you know, lit up an entire country. You're standing over the free kick. Is there anything interesting about it? Did you have to fight to take the free kick? Were you the designated free kick taker? Take us a little bit behind the curtain.
Oh, that's crazy, man, that you're asking that. Because, you know, I really haven't talked about this For whatever reason, everybody asked me what was it like, or you know, how did it happen. But it's actually a pretty funny story. It goes to the night before when Bora took us to the stadium, and as a group, we all held hands in the middle of the field, and he showed us a video of just a reminder of some of the special things that happened throughout the year. And, you know, they kept showing this free kick from Claudio Reyna and over again because it was such a great shot. And we realized that night, Glenn, that we didn't know who was going to take free kicks if in the event that we got one next day.
Oh, wow.
And so what ended up happening was I told our equipment manager to bring my shoes with me. And I went out on the field, and I wasn't supposed to, and they were really angry with me. And I hit a few. I just wanted to see what that felt like. And the one thing that I took away from that was, man, the ball really sails in this place. Maybe it's because it's indoors or whatever the reason. And I remember thinking, you really don't have to hit it that hard. It's gonna go. It's like a golf shot. Let the club do the work. So when we got into the game, John got fouled. We didn't know what to do. It was pretty far out. It was a lot further out than. And I convinced the guys. I said, I got it. I said, I got this. And Cello says to me, why don't you just play it to me and I'll hit it? Tab walks past me and says, just put it on goal and don't embarrass us. And I remember thinking, like that's just Tab. You got to, like, block it out. But as soon as I hit it, Glenn, I knew that I couldn't hit any better, and I thank God that I had been there the night before to do that little walkthrough, even though they told me not to, and I got yelled at, and Bora was really upset.
That's amazing.
But it was a wonderful moment, obviously. But again, if I don't hit those two or three shots the night before, God knows where that happened. It could go in the 18th row, but it found its way to the top corner, and I'm pretty happy.
It was pretty spectacular. We got a lot of us off our couches. We're talking to Eric Winalda, 1994 World Cup U.S. Men's National Team player. He's on Sirius XM Radio. Eric and I have actually done some broadcasts together. Remember, well, we're not going to get into that because I want to stay on topic here. Talking about that free kick right now, does that – I mean, that has to kind of grip at your heart a little bit, right? I mean – just to reflect on it.
It was so important, really, you know, that we got a result. I mean, I think that was, and we knew how good Switzerland was, with Schapizau, you know, Adrian Knupp was another guy that I knew, with Schwarzer playing in the midfield. They were a wonderful team. And when we first saw the draw, you know, Switzerland, Colombia, Romania, we were like, holy cow, we've got to figure this out. And it was actually flipped. I mean, we always thought we could get a draw with Switzerland. We never thought we'd beat Colombia. And we thought we had a chance to beat Romania, and we ended up flipping those two. But when I go back to even watch it today, or I think about it, or one of my ex-teammates, Tab, had said something even this morning about it, it's kind of cool, you know, because it's such a little freeze-frame moment in time, an opportunity to do something really special. I remember, I'll give Bora a lot of credit here. Bora was an amazing guy, and he was misunderstood at times. But the last thing he said to me before I went on the field was, today's your day. It's going to happen. And I, you know, it sounds like just something you would say, but
yeah,
it really ended up being one of the best days of my life.
All right. Speaking of Bora, Eric, if we were in a locker room with you guys on the 94 team, how is Bora talking to you about tactics and the way you're going to play?
You know what? It's a great question. We had that benefit, you remember, Glenn, of all those guys essentially living together, being together for all those, you know, and being in essentially like a camp and being on contract with the national team. And they were there for months. And then Ernie and John and Tab and myself, we kind of came in late. But the tactics were done. Like we knew everything that we needed to know months before that game. Everybody just understood their role. And for me to really, you know, think about each individual team, how we were going to handle, you know, playing against different styles of, you know, opponents and whatnot. The way it worked is Team Bolikovsky had Romania. Ziggy Schmidt was basically in charge of Switzerland with the German, you know, being able to speak German and whatnot. And Steve Sampson was in charge of Colombia. So Bora delegated all of his energies on the tactical side to those three guys. And we treated each game individually. So we didn't get the pregame speech from our coach. We got it from each assistant coach who had been given the job or the task of preparing us for the game. So all of that work, I mean, we really, really understood exactly what we were going to do because he had asked Ziggy, Timo, and Steve to do their jobs, and that was to prepare us for one individual game. So it was almost like a book, and we turned the page, and the plan changed completely because we had to play completely different against Colombia than we did against Switzerland, and then we had to alter the plan for Romania, obviously. But Boro he really wasn't a big talker. We understood what we were doing tactically, how he wanted to play. He was the free kick specialist and the set piece guy and the inspiration to each one of us individually. But not really. You never really got into the tactics, Glenn. It was all the other guys' job. And that's probably why they hired Steve, because we beat Colombia. So they thought he was a genius. No.
Interesting. Yeah. So you said there were differences between how you played against Switzerland and Colombia. Can you give us some basic ones?
So, you know, we it was all about, you know, starting points and finishing points, to be honest. And, you know, my role obviously was very different against Colombia. I was expected to drop deeper into the midfield as a forward or a false nine, if you will, behind Ernie, and to kind of block off, you know, Alvarez to make sure that he couldn't be the distributor, just keep him busy. But against Switzerland, I had a very different role in the sense that I was expected, you know, after the moment the ball got past me, you know, my job was to go find space and to be a part of that transitional moment of going forward, to catch them off guard. Against Colombia, it was very different. And then Romania, that game changed three times in one day. You know, once we went down, we really went after it and tried to get it was a little bit haphazard in the later stages of that game. But we were prepared for each opponent. Each of us knew, you know, what exactly our fundamental roles were going to be. And then we were given certain licenses to go forward. Like Dooley was allowed to go against Switzerland to sneak from behind him, and I was to protect. And then it was a flip of that when we went against Colombia. So I really got to say, I mean, go back and look at it, all the craziness with Bora, we knew exactly what we were doing. I think the results were reflective of that.
Yeah, fantastic. So here's how it went for the U.S. 1-1 with Switzerland. Eric scored the free kick in the 58th. 2-1 over Colombia. That was the big upset in the Rose Bowl. And then Romania, again in the Rose Bowl on a Dan Petrescu goal. Many people remember that name. Get a 1-0 win. You guys advance. You play Brazil. That's the game. Leonardo sticks an elbow, and Todd Ramos is head. Horrible. And Brazil ended up winning that 1-0. Maybe take us into the Colombia game, because that's still one of the most pivotal games in U.S. history. Obviously, the own goal from Escobar led to everything off the field. Ernie Stewart had a goal, but that was a Colombia team. Did you guys know that all this crazy stuff was going on in their hotel? Did you know? Because there was a lot of craziness.
But if you go back and you start like about 1990, I mean, we didn't play any other opponent more than Colombia. We were always down in Miami playing against Colombia, getting used to it. And so we kind of really knew them. I actually was a part of the UNICEF game where I, you know, Valderrama and Freddy Rincon and Escobar were all part of that. Escobar and I were roommates, but then we changed it because we were like, I can't talk to you. You can't talk to me. Like, you want to change? he was such a sweet man, and he had marked me on numerous occasions. And what was odd about that is, you know, I, in my limited Spanish, I said to him, mala suerte, when we were walking off at halftime, and I had never really heard him speak English, but he looked right at me and he said, you have no effing idea. And it still gives me chills to this day because obviously what happened, but, we didn't know the extent of it all, but they were still a brilliant team. We really got through the first 20 minutes. They had a bunch of great chances to score. I think one of them, you know, it was Mike Sorber's left cheek that saved our butts. But we grew into the game. We got some confidence, and then, you know, we had our moments. I mean, I'm really proud of the goal, to be honest, because I think Dooley passes the ball to me. My job was to come in the deeper role, get attention, because we knew they put a 4-2-2-2, so they would have a tendency to allow the wide spaces, in a transitional moment. So the ball, when it came to me, I had to keep my head and three guys around me, but I knew exactly what I was doing. It was fine tap. That was like literally in my head. It was just get the ball, fine tap. Get these guys busy, make them all cave in on me, and then try and, in a clever way, get the ball to Tab where he can have space. And you can watch that thing 100 times, man. And you tell me if there's anybody that's given, you know, a better pass in a World Cup, and I'll buy you a drink. But I don't think so. At the speed of it that the ball is going, for him to clip the ball into space the way it did, to entice the goalkeeper to come out the way he did, and for it to kick up like it was a 9-iron on a great green was just the genius of Tab Ramos. So that goal was something that we had practiced over and over, and thought that this would be a great way for us to get him, because Ernie was quick, faster than both of their central defenders. A well-timed diagonal run was going to beat him. I mean, that's the only time I remember thinking to myself, damn it, Bora's a smart guy. He told us that's how we were going to beat him, and then that's how we just beat him? Crazy moment.
That's amazing. Great story. That was a USA 2-1 over Colombia. The Colombians got a late goal from Adolfo Valencia, Trent Valencia. And then it was on to Romania. So based on the fact that you got, you know, 4 points at this point, what was the mindset going into the Romania game?
It was win, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously we could rehash that moment with Tony. He misjudges it, and you know, that near post goal really shouldn't have happened, because he just misread it and he thought he was going to cross it, and then he slotted him near post. As unfortunate as that is, we were for large spells of that game the better team. We really were. I mean, Ernie and I had a couple of moments where I missed a header, a glancing header. He got in behind, and it was a well-timed, I think it might have been Lupescu who made a great block on him. We felt that was a game that we could have won, regardless of the fact that Haji was amazing and had a wonderful day against Colombia the first day. But we felt that we could win that game. We were devastated when we lost. We really felt like we might have cheated ourselves out of an opportunity to advance, but we were able to get through.
Eric Winalda joining us. This is really, really good stuff. Talking about the 1994 World Cup. Let me take you into the present now, and just, you know, and how it feels to have been a part of, you know, what was a history-making World Cup, one that people were really kind of around the world going, why is the U.S. hosting a World Cup? They have no soccer culture there. But it turns out to be, may still be, the greatest World Cup ever as far as attend. I think it was an average of 69,000 fans at the games. So we fast forward to now. We're going to host it with Canada, Mexico. There's a lot of buzz here in Houston. We have 7 games. I know there's buzz out where you are. So what are your kind of big picture thoughts on a World Cup that's going to go to 48 teams now?
Well, I'm fascinated by, you know, the realities of what we're dealing with right now. I mean, people need to understand this has what's happening right now, literally with the talent that we have, has no bearing whatsoever on the mentality or our ability to get results a year from now.
Correct.
I think it's, I really do.
Eric, say that again, because that's one of the smartest things that's being said, and we got about 2 minutes, but say that again, because that to me is one of the most intelligent takes.
Your boys are going to be fine. We have incredibly talented players, and we have a very astute coach. I think when we get closer and closer to the final, we'll be able to figure out how to play. And I'll tell you this, we had no idea where we were before the 94. A year out, that team was all over the place. So once the World Cup started and the 12th man kicked in, I'm really looking forward to seeing what our boys can do. We're going to do a lot better than people think.
Fantastic way to end this really, really interesting interview. We're going to have to bring you back on because you and I got to talk about player development and some other things. But I want to thank you very much for coming on tonight. Again, what an indelible moment you produced with the free kick, but there were more good moments. That's the one that people might remember. But a big thank you to Eric Winalda. Eric, thanks for coming on tonight. I appreciate it.
Anytime, buddy.
All right. That's Eric Winalda, U.S. Men's National Team. That was fascinating. I mean, talking about taking some free kicks on the Pontiac Silverdome surface ahead of time. That's pretty cool. Great stuff from Eric. Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, ESPN 97.5, Coca-Cola Southwest. Thank you for your sponsorship. Energy, Quanta, Houston Methodist. We're going to continue each and every week getting great interviews like this with the men that played in the World Cup and kind of digging a little bit deeper. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. It's time for Jorge Ramos.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay, that's cool.
Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the night tonight on Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the World Cup. Yes, Houston, Texas, we will be hosting the World Cup next summer for the first time ever. 48 teams will be involved, and we're glad you found this show here on ESPN 97.5. Dovetails perfectly with last night's Soccer Matter, so each week, nice solid block, 3 hours of soccer talk. This show is presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, and Quanta. We finish it up tonight with one of the great commentators. You may know him, I'm sure you know him, from ESPN Deportes, Jorge Ramos. Last night was on Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Well, tonight, here is part two with a focus on the World Cup. And Jorge's got an idea on maybe how to kind of bridge the gap between the commercial side of the World Cup and the competition side.
Well, I have to say that lucrative is the enemy of soccer these days. That's why we have so many soccer games. That's why players are getting injured all the time. And they are complaining, although they complain, but I don't see them saying, no, we won't play this tournament or the friendly games. Or they have to do something. They have to force the situation. How do I feel about the World Cup? It's great. It's coming to this country, going to Mexico, going to Canada. From that point, it's fantastic. I think that in the first round specifically, we're going to have some games that I don't think I'm going to spend time watching them, okay? So, lucrative. FIFA is going to make money and others are going to make money. But for me, being a fan, they don't bring nothing to me. In the first round, I think more than ever, this has been said all the time, World Cup start in the second round, eighth or fourth finals. I think never applied that great like it's going to be applied in this coming World Cup. The real World Cup is going to start to happen once we are in the eighth final. The first round, I don't know, it's just an entertaining, but not much to see. Not much to see. And on top of that, there are some national teams that are going to be in that bring nothing to the world of soccer, and they deserve the chance. But you know what? not coming to the World Cup. They deserve the chance to. I always had an idea that soccer should be the meritocracy, and it should be like Davis Cup in tennis, okay? That goes up and down, okay? And first division, second division. And maybe you have to do two World Cups at the same time. You know, you have the second division World Cup, and in the same day, same field, okay? So you have two games, and then you go up and down, okay? From second to first and first to second. Something like that, but to have 48 teams, which I will say probably 24 of them has nothing to do in a World Cup, I don't think it helps the event itself.
So 1998, they expanded from 24 to 32 teams.
Yes.
The quality remained good. Now we're going from 48 teams, 32 to 48. This is another 16 teams. We're doing everything we can to demystify and break down the greatest sporting event in the world, bar none, because you have qualification. It's only every 4 years. I like your idea, but isn't that, again, diluting it? I mean, why do we want to dilute something so special? I mean, I know it's for dollars and the commercial side of it, but it does make me kind of sad because it may just become another tournament in the big picture.
Well, yeah, you have... I don't know. Listen to this. You know what CONMEBOL is proposing to FIFA, and already Infantino said that he's going to take into consideration. For 2030, CONMEBOL is proposing 62 teams.
62. Yeah, I heard that. Yeah,
I mean, isn't that, or 62 or 64? Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? So, yeah, it's diluted, but I don't know if FIFA needs to give a chance to those countries that never are going to make it with 32 to a World Cup. I think it has to go in another pathway, but not to bring it directly to the World Cup. Look at Maybe.
FIFA, but isn't FIFA all about we're growing the game, we want it in every pocket of the world, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all, because what they want to do is they want more regional representation. They want to raise the global awareness of it, but in the process, it's a balance between that and the great competition in history.
Yeah, but let me tell you, let's get a team. A national team. Let's say Colombia. Let's get Colombia. Will Colombia win a World Cup in the next 50 years? I really doubt it. But if there is a first division and second division, Colombia could win the second division World Cup, which is a fantastic achievement, and going first in the first division. I don't know if you understand. But,
no, I do. I understand what you're saying. You're saying make two World Cups.
Make two World Cups. I mean, it won't happen. It won't happen. Never it will. It's just my crazy idea that many people listening to us now won't agree with it, but I had to say it. I had to say it.
Yep. He is Jorge Ramos, and Jorge Ramos and Subanda is coming back June 30th, 6:30 Eastern time, 1 week from Monday. And I'm glad you're back, Jorge. I'm glad you got refreshed. I'm glad you're back.
My wife, too.
Yeah.
So I got busy. She said, Jorge, you have to do something, but we cannot see each other every 2 seconds.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but that's what you call love. That's love. So, look, you're Uruguayan. Tremendous pride in that beautiful sky blue Uruguayan uniform. Tell us about Marcelo Bielsa. Tell us about Uruguay. Tell us about where they are in World Cup qualifying and what you see from them in the future next summer in the World Cup.
I tell you what, I am a Bielsista by nature. I got to know Marcelo. He had been in my house. So, but I think at this point, I'm disappointed with Marcelo Bielsa for many reasons. One of them, and the most important, is that Uruguay is not playing the style of Marcelo Bielsa. I don't know if the fault is of is the players or Bielsa itself, but the style remains the same. The achievements remain the same. We are fourth today in the qualification standings, which we did with Tabárez also. So he's getting a bunch of money from Uruguay Federation. And in reality, you don't see any difference. We thought that because Bielsa was coming, we're going to be playing friendly games against Germany, against Spain, against England. No, we played friendly games against Cuba, Nicaragua. So, I mean, it was necessary.
That's disappointing.
Yeah, it was necessary at this point to bring Bielsa and pay that kind of money for it. I don't know. I don't think so. Although I have to admit that I was wrong. When they signed Bielsa, I was very happy, and I sent him a message congratulating him and thanking him that he chose Uruguay to coach. But at this point, I'm not happy at all the way the team is playing. And not only the team. Some decisions in choosing players also I'm disappointed. But you know what? We have to wait. You know, after Copa America, everything started to fall down. We didn't do good at Copa America. And from then on, we didn't do good in the elimination game. I think we're going to end up in second place behind Argentina at the end of the elimination games. But I'm not happy with Bielsa. That's my point of view at this point.
Jorge, we got a minute and a half. Just tell me about the magic of the World Cup in your mind.
The magic of the World Cup is the world stop anything they are doing. I was thinking the other day, wouldn't it be fantastic that the World Cup was happening now? Maybe that was the case. We didn't have the war between Russia and Ukraine, between now Israel and Iran, and so on. That's the beauty of World Cup. I mean, it has an impact in the world. Everybody becomes a fan. They forget the bad things happen in our lives, and everybody is friendly, everybody is happy, and that's the beauty. That's the beauty. It's incredible what our sport can bring to humans. And I hope we don't have to wait until next year for the war, all the wars around the world stop.
Beautiful way to end it, Jorge. Thank you so much. I want to remind everybody, Jorge Ramos and Subanda, the podcast. It's a week from next Monday, June 30th, 6:30 Eastern time.
You catch it on 6 p.m.
6 p.m. I'm sorry, 6 p.m. You catch it on YouTube, TikTok, X, you name it. It'll be out there.
You Jorge. Name it. Yeah, Spotify, Amazon, Apple Podcast, you name it.
You're the best, Jorge. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Glenn, thank you again for this opportunity and to spend some time and talking about the game.
All right, that does it for Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup here on ESPN 97.5. Don't forget, get the podcast of this show at both Spotify and Apple. You can get it also here at ESPN975.com. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you're catching on to it, spread the word. Be a part of it. We got a lot of great like-minded events going on. One tomorrow, 4:30 to 5:30, you can meet the head coach of Curaçao, the legendary Dick Advocaat, at the Houston Dynamo headquarters. Of course, Dick Advocaat has coached the Netherlands amongst many, many other big name teams, Rangers in Scotland, on and on. We can go PSV. So that's an event 4:30 to 5 tomorrow at the headquarters of the Houston Dynamo. You can meet and greet Dick Advocaat. All right, that does it tonight for Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. For Brian McDonald, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everyone.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.